Though thousands of years have passed, and there are dozens of different accounts, I have concluded that the Destroyer was one of the last masters. Perhaps he escaped the final mysterious acts of our dead gods and was older than anyone knew. Or perhaps he knew how to harness the elements in a way none of his people understood. Of course, it could just be that the stories have been exaggerated over the years of the telling. That is how history becomes legend. She smiled and took a final bite of cake. This was too good. I want 3 more pieces. How about you? She grinned mischievously, and it reminded me so much of Nadia that my heart warmed. I think my stomach would be terribly upset if I ate 3 more slices, but I would gladly have another. I returned her smile, and we both giggled. This woman's sister killed Kyaer. My mind's voice cut off my giggle, and I stifled a sigh. Bring us the remainder of this cake, more port as well, the Empress said to no one in particular, but the door opened almost immediately, and we found the cake laid between us and our small glasses filled with the dark liquor. Some parts of this legend are surely fantasy. She shooed her servants away and cut 2 large pieces of the cake, placing one on each of our plates. I noticed that she got a bit of chocolate frosting on her thumb and sucked it off almost exactly as Nadia would have done. The most fantastic said that Kyaer's power grew suddenly, and he turned into a dragon more massive than the 2 he defeated many years before. Other accounts say that he harnessed magic more powerful than anything that his soldiers had ever seen, killing thousands of them. Some accounts claim that he pulled the moon into the planet, destroying half of the life on the world. The truth was that he escaped and killed many of his warriors. I don't know how many, but I guess thousands. It doesn't seem like the Kyaer I knew. I frowned and took another bite of cake. I'm sure Kenneth's warriors explained that anyone who calls themselves Kyaer is actually not the real Kyaer. They are merely pretending. Yes, they explain this. I sighed and looked down at the dessert. I am not a warrior, nor a member of your race. I knew nothing of these legends until now. It will take me a long time to accept the truth of your story, as it is so different than anything I was taught and grew up believing. I do know that the Kyaer I know could not have done these things. He was powerful, but he did not murder people or elvens without cause. He was just. But he did believe he was the Kyaer you spoke of. I tried to keep the bitterness out of my voice, but I heard how clearly I failed and saw it in the Empress's reaction. I am sorry for your loss. I have lost loved ones as well. My father and mother were taken from me at a young age. I do know that the accounts were all in agreement. The Destroyer killed many of his own people, perhaps doing more damage to them than the dragons had in the final battle. He was defeated by his generals and killed over 5,000 years ago. The Obarni only lived 500 years at the most. The man we know, who calls himself Kyaer, could not possibly be the original Destroyer. I nodded, and believed she was probably correct. I did not know why Kyaer would pretend to be someone so hated and feared, but perhaps his memories had been altered by whatever suspended state we found him in. I could not imagine him capable of the atrocities the Empress had accused the Destroyer of committing. The man I loved would not have murdered innocent children of any race. It no longer mattered who he was or was not. He was dead. After Kyaer was killed, Nyarathi realized that her people would need ovules to escape through the Radicle. She did not have any and did not understand how to create them. All she knew was that they required an elven to sacrifice themselves. She took a grave risk and approached the leaders of the Obarni. They came to an agreement, to the benefit of both races. Nyarathi would be given ovules for her research, and when she had determined how to use them, she would share the information with the Obarni. This created a lukewarm peace and the chance for our kind to escape the Obarni. The Obarni also began researching the radicals and ovules. Malik had been inquiring relics of the past for many years during and after the wars. The pact with Nyarathi gave him hints of how to use them, and by the time Nyarathi figured out how to create an ovule and use the radical, his people had also reached a rough understanding of the same magic. Each race discovered that they did, in fact, need the other. Ovules could only be made through elven sacrifice, but the actual crafting of the device could only be completed by a human possessing the power of the elements. Nyarothi did what she could in the negotiations, but she had little leverage. The Obarni had the ability to kill our people to create ovules, yet we could not force them to make an ovule for us. They agreed that as long as the elvens provided them with a willing sacrifice every year, our people would be granted their freedom and allowed to live. If they required their own ovule, two sacrifices would need to be provided, and one would be returned to them. "That does not sound like a very good deal for the elvens," I said. "I was not alive during the negotiations," Talaxthi said with a smile, "but I am sure that Nyarothi made the best choices she could, given the circumstances. The treaty has lasted these 5,000 years, but the Obarni have taken more and more of our liberties away with each decade. They followed our kind's first migration to a nearby world that was sparsely inhabited by humans. We were given small plots of land to inhabit, but the threat of extinction was forever in our minds. Thousands of years passed, and my people spread across half a dozen worlds in attempts to escape the Obarni. Each exodus proved less effective at gaining us new freedoms. Even attempts at renegotiating with the Obarni clans failed. Each new treaty was proven to be a lie. They did not want to leave us alone. They wanted to raise us like cattle and slaughter us for ovules. When I was born, I felt the same pain and injustice that all of my ancestors carry through the generations. We made mistakes in the past, but we had done our best to follow the wishes of our gods. I wanted to do everything within my power to free my kind. I knew that if I could just understand our history, if I could grasp the powers of our dead gods, or perhaps if I raised an army to fight like Iorathi, I would make a difference. I know that you can empathize with my desire to save my people. I nodded and realized that I was beginning to feel sympathy for this woman, and even the elvens. My father and Kyair were dead because of her. My country had been conquered by her. I reminded myself of what Kyair had told me. The elvens were not victims, and were not without blame. So I went to work, starting when I was still quite young. I sought allies on the various worlds we inhabited. I explained my vision to my kin. I told them that I wanted a world for us alone, where we could live without interference from the Obarni. My vision was so compelling to my people that I gained support and further access to the knowledge of our past. We began training in earnest, and word spread throughout our worlds that I was recruiting warriors. We learned how to use our magic, and we grew. Then I devised a plan, and after millennia of silence, the dead gods once again spoke to us, indicating that I was indeed on the right path, that they approved of my plans. She paused and cut another slice of cake for herself. She looked at me with a raised eyebrow and then cut me a piece when I smiled back. "They spoke? Does that mean they are alive?" I asked. "Not quite. We witnessed the birth of not one, but two singleborns in the same year. It was clearly an omen, since there was no record of this ever occurring in our past." She finished up her glass of port and then promptly filled it. With a gesture, she offered to top mine off, and I let her, but decided I would not drink any more. I was still new in my role, with only a few thousand loyal elvens committed to my cause. The birth of the singleborns united the rest of my people, especially as the singleborns matured and joined my army. I had cultivated a talented group of elvens, men and women of the highest caliber of skill and intelligence. I based the organization of my army off of what I had learned of the Destroyer, with generals commanding smaller units. The Obarni had a tradition of contests they held amongst their kind every 10 years. Most were battles of strength and endurance that rewarded families descended from the original armies of their great generals. We prepared and trained, and then asked to be allowed to compete. "They didn't think you would win, did they?" I smiled, and the elven woman matched my expression. "No. They had not been paying much attention to us for the last 20 years. I used my best negotiation tactics and managed to convince them to let us participate if we gave them a few more sacrifices during the year." "Isn't that a steep price to pay just to enter a contest you could have lost?" I asked. "Yes, but the only other option would set the plan back decades. We had volunteers for the additional sacrifice. We always did. Our elders, most of whom had grown brittle with age, were happy to help their people. I nodded at her words, and the beautiful woman continued. We won the first set of games. The Obarni clans were outraged, but we had played by their rules. The winning clan is traditionally granted a boon by the other clans, and would be trusted to carry the betrayer's cursed armor for the next 10 years, until the next competition. I, however, wanted nothing to do with the armor, but instead asked for my people to be given our own world, far removed from the root network of the Radicals. This world. My world, I said with undisguised venom. Yes. You see, Jesme, not only is your world very far away from the rest of the Obarni planets, it only has 4 Radicals connecting it. Most other worlds have over 20. She had not touched her 3rd slice of cake yet and took a delicate bite before continuing. There is one on the border of Temata and the Icelands. This is the door my army moved through. The 2nd is in your Teeth Mountains. The 3rd, we believe to be where you found Kyair, somewhere in the south, however we are unsure of its precise location. The 4th is actually right beneath this castle. So that is why you want to be in Naya. Yes, Jesme. Originally, when we first planned to come here, I had intended to destroy the Radicals to prevent the Obarni from following us here as they have done in the past. But as we did more research, we realized that there were other methods we could employ. We guessed that some of the humans on that world might be descendants of the Obarni that were so skilled at using the doors. People who might not know the elements, but would have a connection to the Radical through their blood. Their heritage carries magic that could be more powerful than the elements. She smiled at me, and the realization struck sharply. Me? You think I am one of these descendants? I am positive that you are one. You possess a power that you haven't realized. Your brother has some, too, but in all honesty, she smiled at me and leaned back. He has no discipline and would never be able to master the magic. I also find him lazy and repulsive. I tried not to smile at her words. Nadia and Kyair did not care for Nanos, but it seemed that everyone else adored my brother and let him bully me. Your uncle and cousin might also have the same powers dormant inside of them. I will be meeting with them as soon as I can. I nodded and leaned back in my chair. My head was spinning, but not from the alcohol. I wondered how long Nadia had been here, and if she was okay. I wished more than anything to see her right now and wrap my arms around her. Of course Nanos had been lying about her death. I hope that explains some of my actions toward your people. Even after we prevailed in their ridiculous games, the Obarni did not grant my request. We had to wait 40 more years and win the next 4 games before it became such an embarrassment to them that they had to grant our wishes. When they finally did, we rejoiced, but knew that our real work was just beginning. I needed to migrate an entire species of people from various worlds to this one. Then we quickly had to take what resources we needed and either destroy or control the Radicals. Our initial scouts found that humans on your world believed a twisted history of the conflict. Their language matched the one we had used since just after the time of the Destroyer, but your people thought that the Destroyer fought a group of ancient conquerors. We took the name, hoping it would inspire enough fear in your people to quell resistance. It did work, and I feel that less blood was shed this way. I disagreed with the Empress's opinion on the amount of blood that was shed, but I realized this wasn't the time to argue with her. This is why we're so infuriated with the man you knew as Kyair. The Obarni had promised not to interfere with our migration, yet here he is on this world. I will admit that perhaps I took the wrong approach with him, but I am pleading with you to try to understand my perspective. I am sure you see how frustrated we are and why. Yes. I can understand how that would be upsetting, I said softly, choosing my words carefully. My heart still aches when I think of him, and every time I close my eyes, I see your sister cutting off his head. The thought of him gone from this world makes my heart weep. I wonder if he ever knew your side of the story. He claimed you were the ones to enslave his people and had committed horrible atrocities. From what you have just told me, it sounds as if there have been generations of malice between your races. Yes, there is blame on both sides, to be sure. She nodded and sighed. And I hold my sister accountable for her actions, but I understand why she lost control. I am also to blame. Before they departed, I spoke to Kair for a few hours on matters unrelated to you or Naya. My sister had asked about our conversation, and I dismissed her rather rudely. I believe she carried that anger and resentment. And your friend paid the price for my mistake. She reached out across the table and laid a smooth hand on mine. I am so sorry. I made horrible decisions once I came to your world. I will do better, with your help. I wanted to pull my hand away. More than anything, I just wanted to see Nadia again. If I agree to help you, what does that entail? I have the knowledge to lock the doorways of the Radicals, but I need you to do it. It will take a few weeks, perhaps a month or two, for you to learn how. Then they will simply require maintenance every few years. You would prefer this over destroying them. I thought about what she had told me. I guess there was more information she was holding back. If she really wanted to be done with the O'Barney, then I reasoned that she would want the Radicals gone forever. Yes. What are you offering? I asked as calmly as I dared. I had never tried negotiation. I had never needed to, but I had been around my mother and father enough to grasp the concepts. I am offering a truce between our people. We have magic that can be shared with you and your family, and we are skilled craftsmen. Both of our kind will benefit from a peaceful coexistence. But you will control the country. You have the powerful army and magic. I asked the question and tried to listen to her answer while my mind spun. I recalled the conversation around the campfire with Ayaren and his kin. They had said that this world offered nothing of value to them, so there was no reason for them to aid us in fighting the Elvens at this time. I wondered how valuable the skills the Empress was offering would be to them. Would I be able to enlist their aid once I had mastered these doorways? Perhaps that could be the catalyst that might convince some clans to destroy the Elvens once and for all. If I could teach them to move through the gates without ovules, they would not need to rely on the Elven sacrifice every year. I remembered Kair's words and believed them. As pleasant as the Empress was being now, as sympathetic as her plight sounded, I did not trust her. And I would not accept that her people would be here forever. I did not believe that they would maintain this truce and allow us to live freely. I would have to agree to her terms now, but my ultimate plan would be to remove her and every member of her entire race from my home by whatever means necessary. No, of course not. She smiled and released my hand carefully. You currently have a council of nobles that supports a single ruler. There are votes for major issues. I would like a seat on the council with either you, your uncle, or your cousin on the throne. Nanos would be next in line for the throne. It flows from firstborn to firstborn. My uncle cannot serve as king. These things can be changed, Jesme. We do not have to abide by the old rules. It would be beneficial for us to determine who the best person to serve your country is, regardless of the past and your rules. I am asking you to consider a friendship between our people. I know I have wronged you, but can you bring yourself to forgive me on behalf of my people? She seemed sincere, and I knew that her story had some truth in it. I imagined that she had no need to come to us with a peaceful proposition. If she wanted, she had the power to enslave all of the humans on this planet and coerce me into helping. Still, Kair's words sounded in my head, and I feared trusting her completely. In any case, what she was proposing was better than the alternative. I imagined she would torture me, Nadia, Graykin, and my uncle until I agreed to help her. If I went along with her under the guise of friendship and cooperation, I might be able to learn enough to make a deal with the clans later and avoid violence for now. I had little choice. Kair was gone, and without him, we were powerless against these Elvens. I want peace, Empress. Excellent. She clasped her hands together and smiled, just like Nadia. This will herald in a golden age for our races. I am delighted. She raised her glass of port to toast, and I smiled and matched her cheer. I envision us as partners, sisters even, working together for the benefit of our people, I said. Your words match my heart, Jesme, the Empress said with a sigh of relief. I am glad we could come to this point. I am worried that some of my people might not accept this peace, especially after what has happened. She frowned and nodded at my words. I cannot be confined to my room during my stay here. It sends the wrong message to my people. Can you provide me with one or two of your best guards as an escort? Then I would feel safer in my home. I tried to summon a relaxed smile. I wanted to visit Nadia and my uncle, but I doubted that Talaxthi would let me roam around the castle alone this early in our negotiations. Gladly, I have one in mind that I believe you will like. I will have her come see you once I leave. Speaking of which, she looked over her shoulder at my balcony. The day had changed to dark night, and the wind was now a chill whisper. I would have liked to speak to your cousin Nadia privately, but it must wait until tomorrow. I feel I have been rude to her since she arrived earlier this morning, and I have been keeping her waiting. Talaxthi stood up from the table, and I rose from my chair. I will leave you for the night. We can speak more tomorrow. Would you be available for lunch? Yes, of course, lunch would be wonderful. Thank you for visiting me, I said, and I remembered my manners and produced a curtsy for the elven woman. She matched it with a bow and then pulled me to her chest with a warm embrace. I was surprised by the movement, but her warmth comforted me. I hugged her back and tried not to let my mixed emotions come to the surface. My heart should hate her, but it didn't. I felt empathy and sadness that her history forced her to come to our world seeking blood instead of peace. We parted and then looked at each other again. I smiled at her and blinked to keep my eyes from becoming too moist. I felt as if everything really would turn out for the best. If it did not, I'd learn what I could from the woman and then use my magic to strike a deal with the clans. You should speak to Nadia tonight. You will like her, I said. Kair told me that I would enjoy speaking to her. He thought very highly of her, and she is probably asleep now. She reminds me of you, I smiled. What do you mean? The Empress raised an eyebrow. You both look very similar and have mannerisms that match. She looks more like you than your sister, even though she is human. Talaxthi's face rapidly lost some of its color that had been reflected by the candles. Suddenly, she looked like her pale elven sister. Your uncle oversees the east side of Naya, correct? Her words sounded hollow and empty. Her smile was gone, and her eyes had lost their sharp focus. Yes? I was puzzled by her sudden change in demeanor. His keep is at the foot of the Teeth Mountains, is it not? Her voice was now unmistakably angry. Yes, did I say something wrong? If so, forgive me. Oh, no, Jesme. Her face quickly broke into a smile, and the color seemed to return to her skin. You have done nothing wrong. She took a deep breath and brushed her hand over my cheek. I will go visit Nadia now. Thank you for telling me about her. Of course, and I will see you for lunch tomorrow, I asked to confirm. Yes, I look forward to it. Thank you again. This meeting has been more bountiful than I could have imagined. She bowed slightly as she edged toward the door, then she opened it and disappeared into the hallway. I walked back out onto the balcony. I no longer thought about flinging myself off of the edge. Tomorrow morning I would see Nadia, and then we would go speak with Beltor. I'd tell them about what the Empress was proposing, and we would figure out what to do. Kair was gone from me forever. But as long as I had the rest of my family, life was still worth living.
Chapter 22 The Obarni. I sat with his body for most of the night. The wood coffin was freshly cut and nailed together with obvious care. the smell of sap oozing from the timber, mixed with the pine needles and powerful herbs on the bed of the casket. The fragrance reminded me of fresh rain and new beginnings. It was a comforting scent that my friend would have appreciated. He often would burn these types of incenses when his sickness grew to a point where the earth could no longer quell the pain and he sought other remedies. We were so desensitized to death that we no longer dwelled on ceremonies and grief. We could not. All of us had friends or family who had perished as slaves at the hands of our elven oppressors. All of us had seen our comrades fall in battle. Death was part of training. We thought about the fallen, remembered who they were, and honored their sacrifice, and then moved onward in our quest. But Entis was different. I glanced away from the small brazier of orange coals and examined the old man's peaceful face for the 100th time this night. It looked like he was smiling, the same expression that he had given me countless times, often after he had gifted me with some tiny fragment of advice that I did not understand, but would a few days later. I used to think he enjoyed mocking me, but that was just my ego lashing out. In reality, my mentor had always wanted me to find the answers myself. Thayer approached the tent and pulled back the thick canvas flap. His movement exchanged warm, sap-scented air for a wintry mountain breeze. Although he was as wide as he was tall, and looked like he was made of rock, my friend possessed grace granted to him by hours of physical training. So when he slid around the tight space and sat down across from me without making more than a whisper of sound, I wasn't surprised. "We almost died that day on the foothills, remember, brother?" he said after a few minutes of careful silence. I nodded and smiled at my friend. If not for Entis, this army wouldn't be here. He was a great man. I nodded again. Thayer was a remarkable swordsman, warrior, trainer, and battle strategist. He had never been gifted with words, so the effort he made now to comfort me, despite the awkward feelings it must have given the burly man, was even more meaningful. I did not spend enough time with him over the past few years. We had grown apart. "You run the army, brother. We are all focusing on what needs to be done. Entis gave us the tools to be successful. No regrets, eh?" He smiled, and the sincerity behind his expression made me feel better. I remembered all those years ago when Thayer and I had been training as empowered warriors for the Elvens. Our masters pitted us against each other until we became hated enemies. Then we decided that we would escape together and flee into the wilderness. "Your words are true," I smiled back at him. "We don't just owe our lives to him. He gave us the means to be free." "So we will be free." He shrugged, and his grin widened. "Our forces cannot be stopped. We will crush the Elvens." I nodded, but lost my smile. We still had so much more work to do. There were thousands of Elven tribes, and we had only destroyed a handful. But that work could continue tomorrow. Now I just wanted to grieve. Maybe it was selfish of me to want this time with my mentor. I still had an army to manage, and there were too many places where my attention was needed. I was a fool. I should have spent more time with him while he was alive. I should have expressed my gratitude. I should have learned more from him. It was the last fact that upset me the most. I had not relied on him for advice as much lately, but just knowing that I could had given me confidence to make decisions. This admission twisted my feelings. My friend was gone, and all I could think about was how this would hamper my attempts at winning this war. I was an asshole. He knew this was coming. Malik's voice pulled me from my memories of the old man. I hadn't heard Thayer leave or Malik enter. He had a way of predicting the future. I remembered Entis visiting my tent after I first met Shlara. He had been right about her, as had Malik. I know you are upset that the two of you had grown apart. I frowned, but he knew me well enough to speak the truth. But he didn't feel that way, Kaer. He loved you like his own son, and spoke often of how proud he was of you. Entis was happy that you were coming to him less for help. He said that you were fulfilling your destiny. He often spoke cryptically of my future. It bothered me, but now that he is gone, I wish I had asked him more about what he meant. Pain hit my heart again. I am thankful that he left peacefully, after a long and meaningful life. We got to speak with him one last time. Our last conversation was not the best. I was angry afterward. I even told you that we would not be lost without him. Now he is gone, and I regret those words. I sighed. I took him for granted. He didn't feel that you took him for granted, Malik said. I looked over at my handsome friend and nodded. His words did help me feel better. I wish I had known him as long as you did. He taught me much in the last few years. Now it is up to us. The words lacked my usual conviction, but I didn't think my friend noticed. In a way, that is comforting. He had stepped back long ago before I even joined your army. We know what to do. If there were any secrets, he would have told you about them. He often spoke to me in riddles, as if there was some joke he knew that I didn't. What do you mean? Malik sat forward and looked a little confused. It was just his method of instruction. He would ask me if I remembered how to do something just before setting about to show me how to do it. The first time I learned to harness air, he got a bit frustrated because I did not remember how. That would anger me. The handsome man nodded, and the gray hair around his temples reflected the firelight like silver coins. But anger motivates you. Entis was insightful. He knew the best way to teach each of his students. He would sometimes ask me to figure topics out for myself, but never spoke as if I should already know the answers. It isn't important anymore. I leaned back and uncrossed my legs in front of me. My body was begging to go exercise. I normally didn't sit this long. There are still a few hours before dawn. I will sit with him if you want a break. I'll ask my team to prepare the pyre. Perhaps, once upon a time, our people had a ceremony for their departed loved ones, but the army had no traditions to honor our dead. Most deaths occurred on the battlefield. If we could recover the bodies, we would, then return them to the earth with either a burial or burning. There was no ceremony or grieving. There was no time. I'd elected to burn Entis's body. We would scatter the ashes with the rising sun. Besides myself, Thayer and Malik were the closest to the old man, so we would speak before the gathered when dawn broke. I'll be back shortly, then. Thank you. He nodded gratefully, and I realized that my friend probably wanted to spend some time alone with his mentor's body as well. By sitting here all night, I had robbed him of that opportunity. It was just another way I was being selfish about Entis's death. The stars were bright, angry reminders of the light the dawn would bring. Entis had once told me they were suns, similar to our own, and there were other worlds that circled these suns with lands and people just like us. I then asked him if these people had killed all the elvens on their planet, and he just chuckled. I should have asked him more about these other worlds, though I did not care much about them. It would have made the old man happy. He always seemed disappointed in my single-mindedness and lack of interest in history or philosophy. Malik had been a better student. The two had bonded deeply and quickly over their shared interest in such things. We moved his body into a small tent in the center of camp. There were other tents set up 50 yards away, but most of the warriors were asleep or on the outskirts of the camp on watch. I took a deep breath of the frigid night air and exhaled smoky life back out again. I started a slow jog to the east end of the campgrounds, where the trees briefly surrounded the campsite before opening to a field perfect for training exercises. The stars gave more than enough light for my keen eyes to see, but there were still a few fire pits carefully placed on the open ground for soldiers to huddle around while they recovered from their training. There were only 60 warriors on the field, and most of them were gathered around a fire. As I ran the perimeter of the field, warming up my body, I could hear their various conversations. Some spoke of preparations for upcoming battles, some spoke of previous battles, and some spoke of more carnal desires they wished to act upon with their training partners. There was no talk of Entus. My mentor had not spent a great deal of time with my soldiers. He had focused most of his attention over the past few years on Malik and his troops who wished to improve their mastery of the elements. Before that, he spent time with Thayer and I, but left most of the physical and magical training of the army to us, preferring to advise us nightly. I hoped that more than a few of the Obarni would show up to view his body one last time, but it would probably be a small group. His contribution would never be realized by most of my kin. They wanted to believe in the invincible Kaer and his steadfast team of brilliant commanders. That image was much more romantic and inspiring than a wizened old man who spoke in riddles and could not even walk without a cane. I heard footfalls running behind me and recognized the sound of Shlara a few dozen feet before she caught up to me. Malik said you took a break. I guessed you would be here. I grunted and continued my run. Do you want to talk? She asked after we made a lap around the field. I'm fine. I know you too well to believe that, she smiled, and I chuckled. I am angry at myself, I admitted. She didn't reply for a few minutes, and our jog slowly increased in speed until we were almost running. My sister was raped and killed by elvens. It was a few years before I gathered my people and escaped from the tribe. Malik had told me this story, but Shlara never spoke to me of her past. Everyone had their tragic memories. I knew theirs were likely as terrible as mine. Shlara continued. She was older than me. I always looked up to her. She was so strong and beautiful. I was even a bit jealous of her, as I felt my parents gave her more attention than me. Everyone I knew constantly reminded me of how amazing she was. I could not imagine a woman more incredible than Shlara, but I knew voicing this opinion would give her false hope about our relationship. I was so absorbed in my envy, I never let her be my friend. I never told her I loved her, because I really did not love her until she was gone. Was that when you decided to leave? Yes. It was selfish. I was not motivated by some noble desire to save my people. I was driven by fear. I knew it was only a matter of time before the elvens raped me. I hated them for taking her away from me before I could make things right between us. I hated myself because it was not until she died that I really became my own person. I've already told you how I organized my people and escaped. We were pursued, of course, but the Tulsitas were attacked by another tribe. That was why we made it. Not because of me. Because of simple luck. Preparation has a lot to do with luck. Entus had told me that, and I repeated it to all of my commanders often enough that they believed it to be true. I understand your grief. Once death takes someone, you can never take back the things you said or say the things you should have. but you can remember and honor them by pushing forward and being the person you think they would have wanted you to be. You're right. Entis could have left whenever he wanted. He chose to go now because he knows you are ready to lead without him. He could not have built this army. He needed someone with your charisma and strength. He was ready to leave this world peacefully because he was confident you have mastered all he set out to teach. Her smile was brighter than the stars, and I felt the ache in my heart ease. The regret will pass. I've forgiven myself for the way I treated my sister. You'll forgive yourself for not spending every second of your life with Entis, she continued, and her light teasing did make me grin. I know. New wounds hurt for a bit until they heal. It always hurts to lose someone. Perhaps it is easier to leave than it is to stay on this world, I said. I've thought of that as well. We have many years of work and pain ahead of us. Entis gets to rest now. Her smile faded, and we ran in silence for another quarter of an hour, increasing speed until we sprinted almost as fast as a galloping horse. Spar? She questioned. I nodded, and we slowed down and stopped. We squared off, facing each other a few steps outside the track. She raised her arms over her head and twisted her body sideways to angle toward me. I quickly matched her stance and blocked her first few strikes and shin kicks. I countered with a feinted palm strike to her face and then landed a solid left punch to her stomach. Her abdomen was as hard as a maple tree, but she let out a short gasp of air from the blow. I've never done the morning training routine with you, she said, after she caught her breath and elbowed past my guard, cutting my skin above my right eyebrow. You don't need it. I wiped away my forehead with a flick of my hand and tested her guard with a few quick punches to her face and sternum. She blocked them all, but I was able to close the distance between us and wrapped my left arm over her shoulders. It was a veiled attempt to take her to the ground, but she must have expected the move. When I sidestepped her body to pull her off balance, she flowed toward me with a careful shuffle as soon as my arm touched her. Her head smashed into the bridge of my nose, breaking it with a wet snap that would have tumbled most people. But my nose had been broken hundreds of times, and the normal blurred vision and stinging pain no longer affected me. Instead, I slid my left arm up and hooked it around the back of her neck as I twisted my torso, lifted my right arm under her left armpit, and threw her on the ground head first. My body lay on top of her sideways, and she struggled to block a quick series of elbows that I aimed at her temple. One slipped through and graced her cheekbone. She grunted in annoyance, and then finally caught onto my elbow and pulled me down to her chest, preventing me from getting more piercing attacks in on her face. This position let me knee her in the side, though, but after a few blows that would have easily cracked the ribs of a normal human, I realized that she was just too tough for them to make an impact. I guessed that this grappling game was going to go on for another hour, so I disengaged from her grasp and pushed myself off of her, rolling backward and coming up into my battle stance. She was already on her feet and had a mischievous smile painted on her beautiful face. Her grin did not fade as I threw a volley of left jabs at her face and then followed up with a right elbow. She blocked all the punches and danced away to avoid my forearm. I tripped her trailing foot and managed to force her down again with my shin, then I stepped toward her and kicked out with my left foot. The edge of my boot caught her in the temple and knocked her unconscious. It would have killed a normal human, but Shlara woke up a few dozen seconds later and stuck her tongue out at me. Fuck. I'll feel that for the rest of the day, she gasped and spit out a mouthful of blood. Looks like my unarmed skills need work. You did fine. I am pretty hard to beat. I flashed her a smile and then instantly regretted it. I had to be more careful about leading her on. I hardened my expression and turned away from her. Let's finish our calisthenics. I sprinted over to the nearest pine tree and grabbed the lowest hanging branch with my right hand. Schlara grabbed one adjacent to me and matched my reps until we had done 200 pull-ups. Then we switched to our main hands and began the count again. "Have you prepared some words?" she asked. "A few. I don't know if I will say them, though. We switched back to the original hands. Will Malik speak? I hope so. He is more eloquent than I am." I smiled over at her. "Thayer?" she inquired. "I don't think he will want to." We switched hands again. My muscles were starting to ache slightly. We healed fast, but the strain of this workout was putting more toll on my joints than I could heal. Muscles grew stronger through healing the damage done by lifting. Nerves learned that they could lift the weight by repeating the actions. I could still wield tremendous strength by merely harnessing the power of the earth, but building our overall fitness in this way meant there would be less damage to repair during combat, and we could save our energy and focus for when we were seriously injured by a weapon. Entis and I had worked for countless hours developing the optimum exercise and conditioning plan to help us resist damage. "Pushes?" Schlara's voice pulled my attention back to our current efforts. I grunted and switched hands before pulling myself up to the top part of the limb. Schlara followed my movements until we were both suspended above the tree branch with our feet pointed toward the sky and our faces toward the distant roots of the pine tree. These push movements were harder than the pulls, and they were often done on the ground with just one hand. Schlara and I were strong, though, and we easily lowered our chests to where our hand clenched the thick branch. Then we pushed ourselves up into a handstand with minimal effort. We pushed out a few hundred movements on each side, dipping our heads beneath the branches for maximum range of motion. Then we moved down to the ground for some one-legged jump squats. After another 5 minutes, we were done. If this was a typical day of training, the exercises would be performed 4 more times with slight variations throughout the day. But now, it was time to spar with some weapons. Schlara and I knew the routine, and we walked from the tree in silence to the center of the training field where a few spare weapons and heavy steel shields lay in a pile. I grabbed one of the larger shields and wrapped my right arm through the thick leather loops. The chunk of metal weighed over 20 pounds and came down to my lower shins when I held it at chest height. I swung the bulwark around, adjusting my perceptions to the weight and size. Once I felt satisfied, I picked a spear from the pile and did the same. Schlara matched my weapon combination, although she had chosen a shield 3/4 the size of mine. I pointed away from the stack of arms, and we walked the short distance across the empty field. The sky was lightening to a dull purple color that might have been difficult to see with plain human eyes. It meant that dawn was a few hours off, and I realized I still had much to organize before Entis's cremation. A sudden movement from Schlara ripped me back to the present, and I managed to get my shield up before she skewered me with her spear. "Stop brooding," she commanded with a smile before she thrust her spear at me again. This one was aimed at my face, and the dulled tip slid across the smooth metal of my shield like a flat stone across water. I pushed sideways with my right arm, throwing her spear wide, and then stabbed my own weapon forward. I aimed for where her spear arm was and believed she wouldn't be able to get her own shield there in time. She was fast, and countered with a few thrusts toward the lower part of my body on my left side. I blocked both attacks, and then sidestepped a slam with her shield aimed at my head. The movement left her flank open, and while I couldn't get the point of my spear aligned and into her fast enough, I forced her to lose ground with a retreat she hadn't planned. I took the opportunity to push forward with an attack, and she backpedaled frantically, blocking my spear blade half a dozen times while she tried to regain her stability and put some strength behind her shield. Shlara was quick, though, much faster than I was. Every time I thought I would put the dulled point past her shield, the woman's body melted like steam around the shaft a tenth of a second before she knocked it away. Each time I thought I had flanked her and would take her by surprise, she got her shield in the way before I could strike. After a few minutes of beating her across the training field, I realized that she was probably up to something dastardly, and I switched up my tactics, falling back to give her wiggle room. Shlara's team of warriors spent most of their time with shield and spear, so it was no surprise that she was so skilled with the weapon set. We circled for a few minutes, testing each other's defenses with quick jabs that would have broken arms had we not been O'Barney. Finally, I noticed a small dip in her chest before she thrust toward my right side, and I saw her favor her left foot slightly when blocking with her shield. The pattern might have been a feint, so I tested both sides of her defense half a dozen times to see if she copied the behavior under different circumstances. She didn't, so I took a chance it wasn't a ruse and made a move. When she dipped her chest, I threw my body at her left side, tying up the foot that she favored with my own shield. A quick twist of my right arm and a follow-through with my hips landed the beautiful brown-haired woman on the ground with my spear a few inches from her neck. My risk had paid off. Had she baited me with those movements, she could have set her weapon to meet my jump forward, and I would have been skewered. "How did you do that?" Her green eyes flashed dangerously. Shlara hated to lose, and had always bragged that she could best me in combat. We had only sparred together a few times, and each time she had lost. I tossed my spear aside and helped her get to her feet. "Let's return to the camp." The sky was turning a soft pink. The sun would awaken soon, and with it, I would bid farewell to my friend. Very well. She set her weapons down and walked with me back into the camp. On the way, I explained how I planned my move. She nodded during my analysis and asked a few questions about how she could correct the behavior and how I identified it so quickly. It was the same as when we reviewed your team yesterday. I reminded her of the observations I made a few hours ago before Malik told us that Entus had died. Entus's temporary tent had been removed. In its place was a pile of dried pine wood, meticulously stacked, to elevate his coffin 3 feet off the ground. There were 40 warriors standing in the clearing around the pyre, speaking softly to themselves. Shlara and I waded through the small group until we made it to Entus's side. Malik, Thayer, Gorbani, and Alexia were already there. "Let's wait a few more minutes for the sun to rise," I whispered. They nodded solemnly, and I turned away from them to look upon my warriors. Word must have spread through the camp. The gathered throng had grown exponentially in size, and it looked like at least half of the army was here. Finally, the first bit of the sun crested the eastern mountains, and the land was drenched in a golden light. Its rays warmed my body, and for a moment I believed that everything would be fine. We could do this without Entus. We would vanquish the Elvens and wipe them from this world like fire through a forest. "Should I begin?" Malik asked. I nodded, and he stepped toward the gathered army and raised his voice. "It is rare that death comes to us so peacefully, but that is a fitting legacy for our mentor. Without him, there would be no army, there would be no war, there would be no chance of victory for our kind." Malik paused as his words carried on the wind. "There would be no peace. His memory lives on in our training and our quest for freedom. We will be victorious over our enemies and usher in a golden age for our race. I wish Entis could be there to see it. Alas, he lived his last few years in tremendous pain. He was ready to leave us to our mission. He gave us everything and left us with the tools we need to flourish. Malik's voice cracked a little, and he turned to Thayer. Once upon a time, Kaer and I were in a massive battle against our oppressors, the big man began. The two of us were outnumbered 100-1, and could hardly stand because the field of battle was covered with 8 inches of elven blood, guts, and shit. Then another 1,000 elvens crested the hill, ready to murder us. My brother and I knew we were going to have to actually start working now, so we doubled our efforts, slaying dozens of the ugly motherfuckers with each swing from our dull weapons. Yet even more of the assholes kept coming, like a swarm of angry bees. The slick battlefield became an ocean of red blood. We took turns diving under the guts and shit, holding our breath for minutes, and popping up where those ugly bastards least expected us, slaying hundreds anew before vanishing beneath the tide of elven death. Then Entis came down from the mountains. He breathed fire, lightning, and upheaved the earth with flicks of his fingers. He wiped out the remaining elven forces like an ocean wave cleans the shore. Shlara and Alexia stood at the front of the audience, and they tried hard to keep from grinning. They knew the truth of how Entis, Thayer, and I met. Kaer and I had the situation well in hand, of course, but it was plain to both of us that Entis was someone you fucking listened to if you wanted to kill more elvens. I learned a lot from the old man, and I will miss him more than he'll probably ever know. Thayer stepped back with a satisfied grin on his scarred face. Although his recount of our meeting was completely inaccurate, I found myself smiling at my friend's exaggerated recollection. Attention in the crowd turned to me. I was sure that the warriors wanted a flowery speech from their gifted leader, but while I normally would have little problem producing the right words to motivate them, I knew I couldn't do a better job than Malik's touching farewell or Thayer's tall tale. In a way, they both represented Entis's character. He was wonderful, powerful, kind, and ridiculous. I stepped toward his coffin and raised my hand. Fire emerged easily and lit the stack of wood beneath him. Within a few seconds, the flames began to lick the sides of the casket like hungry orange tongues. First with fire, then the wind will take his ashes. The water from rains will seal his body to the earth, I spoke aloud. These elements were taught to us by Entis. We will repay his memory by freeing our people, I shouted and raised my fist in the air. The crowd had grown now, and there was a sea of warriors, thousands of fists raised into the air. Entis, I yelled. They repeated my words, and the valley reverberated with the sound. There wasn't an elven settlement within 200 miles, and the chances of us being scouted were very slim. I paused after a few seconds and then lowered my fist. Our struggle is far from finished. Train today as if Entis were watching you. Make him proud. Make the elvens fear. Get to it. They cheered again and quickly dispersed. Each part of the army was organized with their own training routine. Within 5 minutes, the camp would be as busy as an anthill. We would grow stronger. I turned back to face the fire. The coffin was encased in orange flames now, and the heat was intense enough for me to take a small step away. I didn't want to join the army in their training quite yet. Someone would have to spread the ashes. For a while, my mind just drifted through memories of my dead friend. I remembered the time we first met, when he had saved Thayer and me from elven capture. I remembered when he taught us how to use our magic to create wind and fire. I remembered the countless times he had advised me on strategy and war tactics. It was a fine ceremony, and an honor to witness, a voice behind me said. I hadn't heard anyone approach, so I spun around to see who had spoken. Wark? The Sklad looked